support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. Música panzone!
Gloria Calderon is the director of the Museo de los Niños in San Jose, Costa Rica. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join Gloria as she talks about the engaging, hands-on children's museum, her passion for the country, and the work in progress to create an adjunct museum showcasing the former prison story. The Children's Museum first opened back in 1994 in a long-abandoned former prison with an evil history rivaling the world's worst hell holes of incarceration. The idea to repurpose a prison as a place of light for children was conceived and shepherded by the former First Lady of the Republic of Costa Rica, Mrs. Gloria Bejarano de Calderon, Gloria's mother.
Gloria, Gloria Calderon Bejarano.
Your father was president?
My father was president in 1990. Okay. My grandfather was president in the 1940s.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a very long political history in my family.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been responsible for things like a little thing called Social Security, National Social Security.
Minor things,
you know, workers' code. And my grandfather was the one who actually made the biggest difference in this country for all of our region, really.
So your mom is the reason that you're here in prison today.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, she had a vision. My mom was born in Mexico, so she comes from a very, very large city. And growing up in Mexico City, I mean, everything in Mexico City is huge. It's kind of like Texas, you know, everything is big. She got married to my dad, comes to Costa Rica, and sees so much potential in this country. And when she started working side by side until my dad finally made it to our presidency. And from then on, she said, you know, what I really want to do is I want to do something amazing for the children of this country. And her vision, her heart was always set on building a children's museum. And the first thing she started to do was she set out to find a place where she could build it, where it would be close to everybody, where it would be accessible to anybody in every corner of the country. And she set her eyes on this place, which was pretty much in ruins.
This was an infamous prison, kind of like Alcatraz.
It was. It was a place where there was a lot of darkness and a lot of sadness and a lot of torture. It's actually been known as the shame of San Jose, the shame of Costa Rica, because it was really a shameful place. A prison that was originally built in 1908 to house about 650 prisoners. It closed finally in 1979 with over 1,200 prisoners. So we would have this overpopulation. We would have areas where even the guards wouldn't dare to go in. So finally it was shut down on December 20th, 1979. And it was abandoned, pretty much.
And so it sat for a long time, then.
It sat for a long time. You've seen the pictures. There was grass that was over 2 meters high, which is over 6 feet high. And there were no ceilings, plants growing all over the walls, the walls were caving in. But it was a perfect spot because it was very close to the city. It's pretty much in the city. But it doesn't feel like so crowded with the buildings all around. It's got a beautiful park all around, so it had a little bit of breathing room. And it had a lot of space that could potentially house many, many wonderful things, which it now does.
And when did your mom go, you know, this would be the perfect place?
I remember her talking to my dad very, very early in her presidency, in his presidency, and saying, you know, Raphael, I think I found the place. And I think it was my dad who first thought she was crazy. I mean, my dad looked at her like, really? And she said, yes, I think this is what I want to do. And I think that is a place. Will you help me? Will you support me? And my dad said, sure. You know, this is what you want to do. Let's go.
Wow.
I know you're capable of doing this. And she started talking to everybody she could. She got together the private sector, the public sector. She talked to everybody she could. And yes, they did call her crazy many times because they said, how is she even thinking of turning this place around? Costa Ricans, I mean, we've been accused of being small-minded, maybe. And I really, really honestly think that if she hadn't been born in Mexico with such a large, broad idea in her head, I don't know if she could have been able to put this place together, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. And your dad obviously helped her and supported her.
Oh, yeah, my dad was 100% behind her. Yeah. They're still today, they're a very rare thing in politics, which is a very solid marriage. And they're very actually well-known in the country for being such an amazing couple, an amazing family couple, really a very tight-knit, supportive family.
So your dad is retired, but he's very much active.
Well, yeah, he's retired.
Uh-huh.
Let's just say we're hoping that he will stay retired. We don't want him back in politics.
Right,
no, we're
right.
done. My mom, however, she was in Congress very recently. And you know how it goes after you've been bitten by the political bug. Mm-hmm. Well, you want to keep working.
Why didn't you get bitten?
You know what? That's a good question. There is still time. Right now, I'm very happy being here, helping my mom out to get this place revamped. We've been open for over 22 years, and every so often, we need to give it a kick. You know, we need to revamp the thing. We need to come up with a whole new different areas and different exhibitions, and that's what I'm here for now. I've visited enough museums in my lifetime, thank God, so that I have a very, very clear idea of what we should do.
Right.
And I think I'm very content with that right now. In the future, I don't know. I have three very small children. Right now, I don't want to be too far away from them, and politics does that.
Yeah, like you said, plenty of time.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I do have plenty of time.
Well, let's loop back to the infamous prison. Because, as you said when I first met you, out of darkness comes light.
Out of darkness comes light. Yeah, and my mom has always said something that is amazing to me. She believes that if you educate the child, you will not have to punish the adult. And I think that is the basis of what this place is. And also, if you make learning fun, there's no limit to what you could teach children if you make it fun. And this is what this place is about. We've got everything from space to dinosaurs to electricity. The kids, you see their faces in here when they get an experiment and they have so much fun doing it, and all of a sudden they realize they completely learned it and they understood everything, the concepts behind it. So why not do this everywhere? We talked about how we revamped this place to become from darkness to light and from a place of horrors to a place of education. And kids who come through these walls are going to experience everything from an earthquake, what an earthquake feels like, even though in Costa Rica pretty much everybody has had that experience. We have a part where they can walk through a rainforest and see some of the animals that live there. We've got a couple of live snakes and, you know, giant, hairy, disgusting spiders. We have a place where they will experience a little bit of Costa Rican history through different types of houses during the different decades of Costa Rica's history. There will be a place where they can talk about oral hygiene. And there are times during the year where we actually have odontology students and dentistry students who come in and check out the kids for free to make sure that there's no cavities there or tell them what to do. We have a recording studio and a television studio where they can decide to if they want to be radio stars, TV stars. We have a place for everything about the human body where they can learn about what's going on inside of their own skin. We have let me see. The dinosaurs. Dinosaurs is my favorite area. You know, who doesn't love dinosaurs? And when it opened, still today, it's relatively new. Maybe a year old. But still, the kids, the first thing they want to see are the dinosaurs. And then we have this whole area about electricity and how it works, what it does, where it comes from. There's so many things in here.
So I imagine you have a lot of school field trips.
Oh, we do. Yeah. We do. We have school. I mean, in fact, it's actually very amusing when my own kids come to the museum with their school because they'll be like, you know, my grandma built this place. This is mine. You know, they walk through these walls like they own them. It's hilarious. But yeah, there's so many kids who come through here. And of course, during summer vacations, we have all sorts of like summer camps. And we have, during the year, we'll have special weekends. Well, we'll have like the anniversary weekend. And there's always a theme. We've had everything from safari theme to astronaut theme to superhero theme. And then we have a lot of events that take place at the Children's Museum throughout the year. We've had Star Wars weekends, everything you can think of. We've had every kind of celebration, every kind of...
So it really is a community center to a point.
Yeah. Oh, it really is. And the cool thing is you see kids as young as a year old, just like marveled by everything. I don't say even younger because you know what's going on sometimes, but you see all these kids, babies, walk in here and they're like, wow. And then you see the adults with the exact same face. So you know that everybody's having fun. And you know that there are many adults that are learning as much as their kids are learning. Because, you know, you learn something new every day. And this is a perfect place to do it. We're actually trying to get programs where we can actually send the museum out into the streets now and get them closer to people in their homes, in their schools. And yeah, if we make learning fun, there's no limit to what we can achieve.
Since I have you as a Tica,
yeah.
Talk to us about, one, what you are most proud of Costa Rica, and two, the number one challenges and things that you want to and would love to change.
Okay. I think I'm most proud of the fact that we are a country that has learned to live for our children, to invest in our children, in our education, in our health system. We are a country that does not need armed forces and does not spend tons of money in armed forces that will just swallow the national budget. We've decided to invest that money in health and in kids and in education. And that's really made a huge difference when you think about our literacy rates and our education rates compared to what the countries that surround us.
Education, it's accessible?
It is free. Costa Rica education is free up until high school. And then we have a lot of very accessible universities that are really within everyone's reach.
And what is it? It's INE or what are the technical school, the training?
Oh, INA.
Yes.
There are also some government-based schools that will teach all sorts of technical crafts.
And that's free, isn't it?
I believe it is, yes. Yeah. Yes,
that's
yes.
So cool.
So that is one of the one things. That is probably what I'm most proud of, being Costa Rican. I mean, we have a love of life also. I mean, you walk around the streets and everybody who's been here will tell you the Costa Ricans are just so friendly. They're so eager to help you out and so eager to smile and just lend that hand, you know? And it's just this pura vida way of life that we really, really enjoy.
Mm-hmm. And pura vida is pure life and also pride
pure
of life.
It's the way we live. It's the way we... It's a very easygoing. Costa Rica does not... I have friends, I went to college in the U.S., like I said, and I have a lot of friends who now live in New York and Chicago, and some of them live in Europe, and they don't have time to sit down and have a meal, you know? That's not how we work. We take our work seriously, but at the same time, we know how to enjoy life. I mean, we're not going to live this fast-paced life that's going to take the life out of us. We always will have time to enjoy our life. That's the pura vida.
Somebody from China said, we live to work.
Exactly.
Whereas some people work to live.
Work to live, yeah, exactly. And what would I change?
If you could attack one problem and change things, what would you work on?
Well, as a mom... Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say that I was a very young mom. I became a mom when I was about 27, 28, and I had my career. I was prepared, I thought, for life and for motherhood. And there were so many challenges there for me. And that's when I most started to realize that we have so many children having children. If there's one thing I would immediately work on right now, if I could just change something, would be to get these girls off the streets, to get them to stop being pregnant at 13, 14, 15 years old. If we don't stop that and if we don't focus on educating our girls and educating our women, that's never going to stop.
But that sounds like starting in primary school.
Well, yes, it is. But we've had problems because we are such a Catholic country. We have many problems in the past trying to get sex ed out there to these kids. Those are the things that we really have to change. We have to change mindsets. We have to make sure that people understand that even though our girls in this country are free and they're free to go to school, I mean, we don't have the problems that we see in Afghanistan and those kind of places, but we can't do that. We cannot get these girls educated and working and getting their lives forward if they're busy having kids and watching children. We can't do this. I'm all for motherhood, but I think motherhood should be responsible, and I really think that that's probably like the first thing I would do. If you start changing that and you get all these girls educated, imagine, first of all, the strength in the workforce. If we get all these women to work and to get them business ready, to business savvy, so they know how to manage their money, that they don't depend on some guy who's going to get them pregnant and then leave them. I think that is one of the biggest problems, and it gets overlooked very easily when you talk about the economy and when you talk about imports and exports, but we got to start at home.
I'm thinking of your mom. What did one woman do? How did she change things? Mm-hmm. How incredible. Yeah,
I think, well, she has been an example for me. And there's four of us in my household. There's my two brothers and my sister. And we've always looked up to both of them for being so visionary in the things that they do. I mean, they've always been clear that if you do something now, you could change so many lives for so long. It's not something that's going to go away. This museum has been open for 22 years. That's not a common story in Costa Rica. There's many things that get done in one government and then the next government, they're gone. For whatever reason, for political reason, for whatever. And this has stood the test of time, and I think it's going to be there for a lot more.
Gloria and an interpreter talk about the creation of the prison museum.
Y los derechos humanos en este lugar estaban completamente, o no existían los derechos humanos en este lugar.
And basically human rights were just non-existent at this place. It was a very, very horrible, dark place.
El 20 de diciembre de 1979, por fin se cierra lo que se llegó a decir que era una vergüenza nacional inclusive.
After being called a national shame, this place was finally shut down on December 20th, 1979.
Ahora vamos a entrar para ir viendo un poquito de fotografías. Pero con un enfoque educativo, y eso es parte de la utilería de la ambientación que vamos a crear.
Okay, so like I told you, this is being built into a penitentiary museum, and this is kind of the stuff that we're going to have so that people will get an idea of what was found in here. Everything from their like self-made Shanks. Weapons, yeah. You know, that kind of thing, all the stuff they would find. Unfortunately, drugs and all that kind of thing. So this is just part of like the stuff we're going to have for people to get an idea of what was found on here.
The next thing I'm going to say is really painful, and that's that I know you have an appointment and I have to go.
That's okay.
So
we'll welcome you back anytime.
Well, that's where I want to go. I want to make a promise that if I come back to San Jose, will you spend time with me so
Absolutely.
We can talk some more?
Absolutely. I will personally be your guide.
I love it and I look forward to it.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
My name is Gloria Calderon Bejarano. For further information, you can contact me at, let's see, my email, my personal email would be gloriacalderonfotografia@hotmail.com. Fotografia with an F, not a PH. My phone number here is 506-8384-0005. Easiest way to get me is with a WhatsApp. Or with through my Facebook page. I have two. I have my photography page and I have my own, my personal page. You can actually also call me here at the center and the message will get through. 2223-3551. It's the Children's Museum. So,
Gloria, thank you. Mucho gusto.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure to have you guys here.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Thanks.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from San Jose, Costa Rica.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
The underbed music, Espiritu Guanacastico, was performed by Compañía Folclórica Matambu from the album Music of Costa Rica. In the cut, Cinco Colones was performed by Orquesta Ceiba.
Support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities, such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing elephant sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives. And Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.